Okay, welcome. My name is Divine. I am a PGY1 resident. This is the 41st episode of the Divine Intervention Podcasts. And really, today we're going to be talking about basically the topic is the USMLE Antibiotic Guide. This is meant to be a very high level, very high yield review of antibiotics for all the USMLE exams. I will say this is probably most relevant to people that are taking step 2 and step 3. Because I've gotten many requests for this. People say, oh, they keep asking about this antibiotic, that antibiotic, how do I know what to use under what circumstance and all that stuff. So I decided to make a very high level review that should help you get most of your antibiotic questions correct on the USMLE exams. Again, this is not supposed to be a guide to treatment, although it'll probably be useful for you in clinical practice, but the main purpose here is to get you exam questions correct. So let's begin. So the first one says a newborn presenting with nuchal rigidity, right? So remember, in the first 20 days of life, the most common cause of essentially any notable infection, right, is group B strep, right? So this kid probably has meningitis. And the thing is, in general, for meningitis in the first 20 days of life on your exam, the antibiotic regimen you want to choose should be one that includes, just remember the term CVA, like CVA tenderness, like CVA. The C stands for third generation cephalosporin. In this case, it will be cefotaxime. Do not give ceftriaxone to a newborn. It causes like some liver problems in the newborn, so you want to avoid that. So you give cefotaxime plus vancomycin plus ampicillin. Okay, so newborn, meningitis, cefotaxime, vancomycin plus ampicillin. The ampicillin helps you cover listeria. Okay, the vancomycin helps you cover MRSA, and then the cefotaxime helps you cover like group B strep / strep pneumo. And another regimen you may see, but is becoming less emphasized on exams, is ampicillin plus gentamicin. Just another thing to keep in mind. Okay, now next one says 65-year-old male presenting with nuchal rigidity, fever, and a headache, right? So again, this is a patient. The big thing I want you to catch here is, so this patient obviously has meningitis, okay? But this patient is more than 50 years old. That's the high yield thing I want you to pick out here. More than 50 years old, you essentially use the same CVA mnemonic I talked about for the first question. But in this case, instead of using cefotaxime, you can use ceftriaxone. So you can use ceftriaxone, vancomycin, and ampicillin. If a patient is a newborn, like first 20 days of life, or more than 50 years old, you almost always want to add ampicillin to the drug regimen to cover listeria, because it's like almost 100% fatal if it's not treated, right? So ceftriaxone, vancomycin, and ampicillin. The ceftriaxone helps you cover Neisseria meningitidis, and the cefotaxime in the newborn also helps cover Neisseria meningitidis. Okay. Now, 33-year-old female with no relevant past medical history, presenting with nuchal rigidity, headache, and fever, right? So again, this is just a garden variety person, no risk factors, presenting with meningitis. You don't use CVA for these people, you use CV. You use ceftriaxone and vancomycin. Again, ceftriaxone and vancomycin. And then, as an aside, how is hospital-associated bacterial meningitis or post-neurosurgical procedure bacterial meningitis managed? Well, for this, you begin to have somewhat different considerations. Basically, whenever a patient develops a serious infection in the hospital, the two bugs you almost always want to cover are Pseudomonas and MRSA. Okay, so for this, you don't pick ceftriaxone because ceftriaxone does not cover Pseudomonas. You want to pick either a third generation cephalosporin that covers Pseudomonas or a fourth generation cephalosporin that covers Pseudomonas plus vancomycin. So for this post neurosurgical procedure meningitis or hospital associated bacterial meningitis, you give vancomycin plus either ceftazidime. Ceftazidime, remember, is the only third gen cephalosporin that covers Pseudomonas, or cefepim, right? So again, cefepim, which is a four-gen cephalosporin, or ceftazidime, which is a third-gen cephalosporin, those both cover Pseudomonas plus vancomycin. Now, for the next slide, a patient presents with headache, nuchal rigidity, and fever. LP reveals gram-positive diplococci and a neutrophilic predominant. So this is obviously strep pneumo. And then in addition to the standard antibiotic therapy, which I've talked about for the high-yield populations in the previous slides, how can patient morbidity and mortality be reduced, right? So for this case, you want to add IV dexamethasone. In fact, this is classically given like a few minutes to hours before the first antibiotic regimen is given, right? Because you want to prevent sequelae like a hearing loss, for example, okay? So you decrease the morbidity and mortality associated with pneumococcal meningitis by giving IV dexamethasone before you give the first course of antibiotics. Now, next question. A HIV positive patient presents with a severe headache and nuchal rigidity. Papilledema is detected on a fundoscopic exam, right? So those are signs of increased intracranial pressure. Now, what will a lumbar puncture most likely reveal? Well, hopefully you're thinking about cryptococcal meningitis, okay? So you'll find a lot of lymphocytes when you do a CSF studies, right? So you'll find like low glucose, high protein, you'll see an elevated white cell count, but it won't be neutrophils that'll be elevated. It'll be lymphocytes that'll be elevated. And the bug we're, again, talking about here is cryptococcal meningitis. Cryptococcus neoformans, right? And you cover this bug. You can test for this infection, one, by doing an India ink stain of the CSF. Or you can do like a particle agglutination assay of the CSF. You can do that for cryptococcal meningitis. And really, the way you treat this is amphotericin B plus flucytosine. Okay, remember, amphotericin B is the thing that binds ergosterol and blows holes in the walls of our fungal cells. In the membranes, not walls, membranes of fungal cells. It binds to ergosterol, and then flucytosine is converted by cytosine deaminase to 5-FU, and then it inhibits thymidylate synthase in cryptococcus. So you give 5-flucytosine and amphotericin B. Okay, cryptococcal meningitis is treated with amphotericin B. And remember, if you give the liposomal formulation of amphotericin B, you decrease the nephrotoxicity associated with amphoterrible. And after treatment, right, for like a year, you actually have to place those patients on maintenance of fluconazole. Okay, so just something how you to keep in mind. And then, so that's what I mean by how is this bug treated after the fact. And if a patient with HIV has bacterial meningitis, okay, you use that CVA treatment regimen I talked about for a patient that's greater than 50 years old, right? So ceftriaxone, vancomycin, and ampicillin. Now, HIV prophylaxis for the following scenarios, right? So if you have a CD4 count less than 250 and you live in Arizona, okay? So you live in a susceptible area, you're thinking about coccidiomycosis. Okay, sorry, I'm giving this from memory. So coccidiomycosis, and for that you can prophylax with itraconazole. Now, if your CD4 count is less than 200, right, hopefully you're thinking about pneumocystis jirovetsi, okay? So you can prophylax against that with Bactrim, trimethoprim sulfamethoxazole. If that's not an answer choice on an exam, you can choose aerosolized pentamidine, or you can choose Dapsone, okay? Those are the more high-yield ones that are tested on exams. Occasionally, you may see them referred to like atovaquone, clindamycin, but those are lower yield, so I probably won't worry about those if I were you. Now, CD4 less than 150 living in Kentucky, right? So again, you live in a susceptible area like Kentucky, Ohio, Missouri, and the works, okay? And they tell you that it's a HIV positive patient, CD4 count is less than 150. You're trying to cover histoplasmosis, okay? Histoplasma capsulatum. You cover that with itraconazole. Now, CD4 less than 100, right? So this is a bug that you should already have covered if you gave a prophylaxis at a CD4 count of 200, all right? So here I'm referring to Toxoplasma gondii. You prophylax with TMPSMX, okay? Bactrim, trimethoprim, sulfamethoxazole. Remember that trimethoprim inhibits dihydrofolate reductase, and sulfamethoxazole inhibits dihydrofolate synthetase. And then if the CD4 count is less than 50, you're trying to cover MAC, the Mycobacterium avium complex. It's also known as Mycobacterium avium intracellulari. You do that with azithromycin. Next slide. Now, patient on chemotherapy develops a fever. White count is 2 grand or 2,000. Now, what are the two bugs you're trying to cover, right? So this patient has a neutropenic fever, okay? You always want to cover Pseudomonas and MRSA, Okay, so in general, on exams, the antibiotic regimen you're going for is ceftazidime plus vancomycin or cefepime plus vancomycin. Very high yield to know that. Next slide. Now, a HIV-positive patient presents with seizures. MRI reveals multiple ring-enhancing lesions in the brain. Okay, so for this, hopefully you're thinking about toxoplasmosis, okay, caused by Toxoplasma gondii. And the way you treat this is with pyrimethamine and sulfadiazine. So here's how they will try to get you on exams. They'll try to get you to pick trimethoprim sulfamethoxazole. Do not pick that answer. That is what is used for prophylaxis against toxoplasmosis. But if you actually wanted to treat toxoplasmosis, you use pyrimethamine and sulfadiazine. Sulfadiazine inhibits dihydropyrrolate synthesis, and then pyrimethamine inhibits dihydrofolate reductase. And then if the patient has signs of elevated intracranial pressures, like they have papilledema or they have altered mental status and stuff like that, you want to go ahead and add dexamethasone. You want to go ahead and add steroids to the treatment regimen. And just this is not in the slides, but I'm just going to say it out loud. If a patient has a neurocystis recurrens from tinea solium, you actually do not give those patients like warm treatment, like albendazole, mebendazole, thiabendazole, and the works. You actually treat those seizures with phenytoin. You don't give the anti-helminthic meds, because if you do that, you can have a severe inflammatory response, and that could actually kill the patient. So you don't do that. You give phenytoin. Now, HIV-positive patient presents with headache and nuchal rigidity. Lumbar puncture is positive for CSF with 500 red cells. Ding, ding, ding. MRI reveals hyperintense lesions in the temporal lobe. So what's the bug, right? So hopefully, again, you're thinking about HSV. The herpes simplex virus. And for this, you give IV cyclovir, okay? If that's not an answer choice on exams, go for Foscarnet. So if you see CSF studies revealing like a ton of red cells, think about HSV. However, if a patient has like a sudden onset severe headache and nuchal rigidity, let's say like 30 minutes ago, and you do a lumbar puncture, you see a ton of red cells, think more about a subarachnoid hemorrhage with that. Okay, next question. Now, HIV-positive patient presents with headache and nuchal rigidity. LP is positive for CSF with a lymphocytic pleocytosis. Now, brain imaging reveals enhancement at the base of the brain. That's the high-yield term there, at the base of the brain, okay? Or you can say, they could tell you in the Q-stem, they could say in basilar cisterns. The bug you're thinking about here is actually TB, okay? And how do you treat TB, right? You treat it with a ripe regimen, right? So rifampin, that's an RNA polymerase inhibitor, isoniazid, which can cause drug-induced lupus, pyrazinamide, right? And ethambutol, that can cause eye problems, right? So rifampin, isoniazid, pyrazinamide, and ethambutol. And remember, to that you add vitamin B6, right? Or pyridoxal phosphate. Good. Next question. A patient presents with a tender lesion on the left lower extremity. Physical exam reveals a well-circumscribed erythematous lesion on the calf. The patient's vital signs are within normal limits, right? So like no fevers, for example. What's the diagnosis? Well, hopefully you're thinking about cellulitis. Now, on exams, if you want to treat cellulitis, these are the drugs you want to go after. You either, and really the most common cause of cellulitis for the most part is Staph aureus, okay? So usually on exams, the antibiotics you choose, the most common answer on exams is clindamycin. If clindamycin is not an answer choice, go for Bactrim. Another answer choice you can go for is cefalexin, okay? Cefalexin, Bactrim, or clindamycin. Those work really well for cellulitis. And please be able to differentiate cellulitis from erysipelas. Erysipelas are classically like very red, very tender, and they are usually very well circumscribed and elevated relative to the surrounding skin, and they're usually on the face on exams. Those are most commonly caused by strep pyogenes, okay, not Staph aureus. So that's one high yield thing you want to keep in mind. And then don't forget that folliculitis, which is another, again, infection of hair follicles, is classically caused by Staph aureus. And then also don't forget, if they tell you that a patient has folliculitis and they were recently in a hot tub, hopefully that makes you think about a pseudomonal infection. Okay, next question. Empiric management of animal and human bite wounds, right? So if a patient has an animal or a human bite wound, you on exams, you want to go ahead and give them amoxicillin plus clavulanic acid. That is the answer you want to go with on exams. Okay, good. So let's go on to the next slide. So this will be slide 13. Now, empiric management of community-acquired pneumonia. For that, you want to go with a macrolide like azithromycin, or you want to go with doxycycline. Okay, so you either use a macrolide or doxycycline. And the way to remember that is just remember like MD, right? So like you're a medical doctor, MD, macrolide or doxycycline. Now, if a patient has hospital-acquired pneumonia, on your exam, you want to choose one of two things. You want to choose a macrolide or doxycycline plus something that belongs to the cephalosporin class. Okay, so macrolide or doxycycline plus either like ceftriaxone, for example. Okay, but if those are not answer choices or they tell you that the patient is penicillin allergic, you can actually go ahead and use monotherapy like a fluoroquinolone. So you can give them like moxifloxacin or levofloxacin as monotherapy. Now, if they mention that if the Q-stem mentions that the patient has like a cavitary infiltrate, then you're probably beginning to think about like Staph aureus, like MRSA. So for that, you either want to basically pick the answer that includes like clindamycin or vancomycin or linezolid. Very high yield to remember that. Now, next slide. Now, these people are all from Boston, okay? Don't worry, I have nothing against the Harvard people, but, well, maybe I have something against the Harvard people. I'm just kidding. Okay, so bullseye rash in a 7-year-old male, right? So this is obviously Lyme disease. The way you treat this, if you're less than 8 years old and you have Lyme disease, you treat with amoxicillin. You do not use doxycycline, okay? Very high yield to know that. Now, bullseye rash in a 30-year-old female, right? So this person is more than 8 years old. So again, this is Lyme disease. You treat that with doxycycline. Now, bullseye rash in a 35-year-old pregnant female, this is basically the exception to being greater than 8 years old with a doxycycline. For this case, you also give amoxicillin. And remember that for Lyme disease, right, your diagnostic testing pathway, you start with an ELISA test, right, that's your screening test, and then your confirmatory test is a Western blot. Now, how do you manage meningitis / chest pain / myocarditis in a patient with Lyme disease? For this one, you go with ceftriaxone. Okay, doxycycline is not going to cut it here. You go for the nuclear option. You go with ceftriaxone. Now, next slide. Now, empiric management of... wait, am I repeating myself? Whoops. I repeated a slide. Sorry about that. I'll just leave that in for now and correct that later. Okay. Now, next question. Patient from North Carolina, ding, 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 presents to the ED with severe headache and a temperature of 104. Physical exam reveals a rash on the palms and soles. Okay. Rash on the palms and soles. That's a classic exam trigger for Rocky Mountain spotted fever. Okay. Now, how do you treat Rocky Mountain? And that's caused by Rickettsia rickettsii. Okay, remember that usually I believe has a positive Weill Felix test. If I'm not mis... Wait, is it negative? Yeah, I think it has a positive Weill Felix test. I'll probably talk about that in a later podcast. I think I've actually talked about it in a previous podcast. But anywho, so how do you treat this in a 7-year-old? Okay, and how do you treat this in a 25-year-old? How do you treat this in a 25-year-old pregnant female? So here's the thing, and here's how they will try to get you on exams. If a patient has Rocky Mountain spotted fever, if they are pregnant, you actually treat that with chloramphenicol. That is essentially the only time that chloramphenicol will ever be the right answer as the treatment for any bug on any exam you take, at least in the US. Now, if any other kind of patient has Rocky Mountain spotted fever, the drug of choice is doxycycline, even if you're less than 8 years old. They will try to get you on an exam by slotting in amoxicillin or a macrolide as an answer choice. Do not pick those as answer choices. If a person, any person that is not pregnant that has Rocky Mountain spotted fever is treated with doxycycline because it's almost 100% fatal if it is not treated. Now, next question. 23-year-old non-pregnant female presents with suprapubic pain and increased urinary frequency, urgency, and burning with urination, right? So obviously this is cystitis, and the most common bug is E. coli, right? And for this, you want to treat with one of three options, right? So you either want to give nitrofurantoin, or you want to give a fluoroquinolone like ciprofloxacin, or you want to give Bactrim, trimethoprim sulfamethoxazole. An alternative is also a drug known as fosfomycin, okay? Fosfomycin, Bactrim, so that's TMPSMX, ciprofloxacin, or nitrofurantoin. Now, and remember that you don't want to use, in general, you want to avoid Bactrim and ciprofloxacin in a pregnant female, right? Because Bactrim can cause some problems for the fetus, like neurotube defects, and ciprofloxacin can cause like cartilage problems in the fetus as well. Now, CVA tenderness plus signs of dysuria, right? So this is pyelonephritis. On exams, the one big thing you want to go after is ceftriaxone. Ceftriaxone is basically the drug of choice for the treatment of pyelonephritis on any exam you take. If ceftriaxone is not an answer choice, go for a fluoroquinolone. Very high yield to know that. But again, if a lady is pregnant, no fluoroquinolone. You choose ceftriaxone. Now, next question says, a 31-year-old female presents with fever and uterine tenderness 2 days after a C-section, right? So hopefully you're thinking about endometritis, right? And how do you treat this, right? So just remember the mnemonic ECG. The E stands for endometritis, and then the C and the G stand for clindamycin plus gentamicin. So endometritis is treated with ECG, endometritis, clindamycin plus gentamicin. And then a 33-year-old female is in labor. Her temperature is 102, and the fetal heart rate is 190 beats per minute, right? So again, if you basically see this cluster of maternal fever and fetal tachycardia, the very first thing I want you to think about on exams is chorioamnionitis. Okay, chorioamnionitis. Now, for chorioamnionitis, your treatment regimen, remember that with the mnemonic CAG, right? So like the CAG repeats in Huntington's disease. C for chorioamnionitis, the A stands for ampicillin, and the G stands for gentamicin. The reason you add ampicillin here is you want to cover listeria. So CAG, chorioamnionitis is treated with ampicillin plus gentamicin. Endometritis is ECG, treated with clindamycin plus gentamicin. Now, next question, how do you treat latent TB? Basically, you can give rifampin for 4 months or isoniazid for 9 months, okay? Although usually on exams, the most common answer you see like 99% of the time is isoniazid for 9 months. And remember, you need to add vitamin B6, also known as pyridoxal phosphate with that. And then for active TB, use the RIPE regimen, right? So like rifampin, isoniazid, pyrazinamide, and ethambutol plus vitamin B6. Now, 21-year-old sexually active female with inconsistent condom use presents with a vaginal discharge, or they tell you that she has cervical motion plus adnexal tenderness, right? So that's like a PID-like picture, right? Pelvic inflammatory disease. So the bugs you're thinking about here are Neisseria, gonorrhea, right? And chlamydia. So for this, you generally want to cover with ceftriaxone plus azithromycin. The ceftriaxone covers the Neisseria, and then the azithromycin covers chlamydia, right? If they don't put azithromycin as the second thing, you can choose doxycycline. Doxycycline also covers chlamydia pretty well. And then the idiosyncrasy here is that if they tell you that, oh, you do like whatever and you just see chlamydia, if you actually detect chlamydia, you actually only treat chlamydia. So you give the patient either azithromycin or doxycycline. You do not need to empirically treat for Neisseria. But if you detect Neisseria, you empirically have to treat for chlamydia. So ceftriaxone plus azithromycin or ceftriaxone plus doxycycline. Now, just real quick, if a patient that has a history of PID presents with like right upper quadrant pain, what are you thinking about? Well, I hope you're thinking about a perihepatitis, right? That's what's known as a Fitzhugh-Curtis syndrome. Now, female with a fishy smelling, gray vaginal discharge. So what's the bug, right? So hopefully you're thinking about a Gardnerella vaginalis, okay? So that's the cause of bacterial vaginosis. And remember, classically, the pH is greater than 4.5, and you treat that with metronidazole. And then a female with a frothy, green, foul-smelling vaginal discharge. That should hopefully get you thinking about Trichomonas vaginalis. Okay, remember the strawberry-shaped vagina or something like that. And for that, or strawberry-shaped strawberry cervix. And for that, again, the pH is usually greater than 4.5, and you treat that with metronidazole as well. And then cottage cheese discharge, hopefully thinking about a candida albicans. Remember, it's a thing that grows at germ tubes at 37 degrees. The pH is usually less than 4.5. So if they give you any female vaginal discharge, pH is less than 4.5, the only thing you should be thinking about on exams is candida, okay? And candida, you can treat it with an azole, like fluconazole, okay? And just real quick, I think this is coming up in a later slide, but just in case it is not, disseminated candidemia, you can actually treat that with, you can use amphotericin B, but probably a better answer on an exam is an echinocandin, like caspofungin or micafungin or anidulafungin. Now, next slide, classic presentation of aspergillosis. So here's how aspergillosis is going to present on an exam. It's going to be a person that is immunocompromised for some reason. Usually it's a patient on chemotherapy, some patient with like neutropenia, okay? And then they will tell you that the eosinophils are elevated in the question stem. And then usually they may tell you the patient presents with like a cough and hemoptysis, okay? If you see that, think about aspergillosis, okay? Or they may tell you that the patient has like a pneumonia that does not appear to be resolving with standard treatment. Think about aspergillosis. And for that, the drug of choice on exams is voriconazole. Voriconazole is the agent of choice for the treatment of aspergillus. Remember, it grows at acute angles, okay, at 45-degree angles, versus your mucor species that grow at 90-degree angles, right? And don't forget that for mucor, if they describe facial pain in a diabetic, usually in DKA, you want to think about mucor. Your treatment is surgical debridement plus amphotericin B. Okay, now, for allergic bronchopulmonary aspergillosis, I'm just going to throw this in here. You treat that with oral glucocorticoids, okay? Now, candidal blood infections, I already talked about that. You can use an echinocandin like caspofungin, micafungin, or anidulafungin. Or for oral candidiasis, you can consider nystatin swish and swallow or swish and spit, whatever floats your boat. Now, for endemic fungal infections, right, so for this, I'm referring to coccidiomycosis, blastomycosis, or histoplasmosis. Classically, on exams, you go with itraconazole for that. But if people have, like, disseminated infections, go ahead with amphotericin B. Basically, any, like, bad fungal infection that's disseminated, or, like, fungal meningitis, go for amphotericin B. And don't forget that coccidiomycosis is associated with erythema nodosum. It's just one of those weird things you want to like sort of lock in your mind for exams. Now, for tinea infections, right? So like tinea this, tinea that, blah, blah, blah. In general, you want to treat with a topical antifungal. However, there are two exceptions, okay? There are two exceptions. There's onychomycosis, that's like nail fungus, or tinea capitis, that's like head fungus. If a person has those problems, you actually treat with oral medications, not topical medications. You treat either with oral terbinafine or oral griseofovin. Remember, griseofovin is that thing that collects really well in keratin-rich tissue. And it's also an inducer of cytochrome P450. And the classic bugs that are tested with regards to the tineas, right? It's either trichophyton, microsporum, or epidermophyton. Those are very high yield things you want to know. Trichophyton, microsporum, or epidermophyton. And then for sporotrichosis, right? So sporotrichosis is caused by sporotrich schenkii. This is classically described in exams as a person like a rose gardener that has like lesions along a lymph node chain. Okay, and then they tell you that, oh, the patient has lymphadenopathy. Generally for that, you cover that with itraconazole. You treat the sporotrichosis with itraconazole. And then again, invasive fungal infections, you treat that with amphotericin B. Okay. Now, next slide. Management of most stages of syphilis. You give a benzathine penicillin G. Okay. So like IV penicillin. If a patient is penicillin allergic, you can give them a macrolid like erythromycin. You can also use doxycycline actually. And then if a patient is pregnant and they have syphilis, you actually use penicillin. In fact, I should modify this. If a patient is pregnant and let's assume they have a penicillin allergy, you actually do not use a macrolide. That won't work, okay? The drug of choice for syphilis in a pregnant patient, even with a penicillin allergy, is still penicillin. You desensitize the patient and give them penicillin. If a patient has neurosyphilis, for example, okay, you actually, again, you give them penicillin. There's no other drug that works. So even if they're penicillin allergic, you desensitize them and still give penicillin. Okay, so pen allergic patients that are pregnant or have neurosyphilis, it does not matter. You desensitize them and give them penicillin. Now, for most GI infections like diverticulitis, appendicitis, cholecystitis, your general management strategy is to give MAG, right? So remember MAG, metronidazole, amoxicillin, and gentamicin. Okay, so MAG, metronidazole, amoxicillin, gentamicin. Another regimen you can use is the CM regimen, so ciprofloxacin plus metronidazole. And then most causes of gastroenteritis can easily be covered with either a fluoroquinolone or a macrolide. But classically on exams, go for a fluoroquinolone. So if a patient has like Salmonella gastroenteritis or like Shigella and all that stuff, go ahead and give them a fluoroquinolone. That's the most common answer in exams. Now for malaria, right, you can use chloroquine, but basically you should maybe never choose that on an exam because there's like resistance like almost everywhere in the world. So other things you can choose mefloquine. You can choose atovaquone plus proguanil. You can also choose artemether plus lumefantrine. I know these words kind of sound bizarre, but you should be able to recognize them if you see them as an answer choice. So you can choose mefloquine. Don't choose chloroquine. Well, I mean, you can, but probably not. But mefloquine, artemether, lumefantrine, atovaquone, proguanil. Those all work well for malaria. And then the most common prophylactic regimen for malaria on exams is mefloquine. Now, how do you kill hypnozoites, right? So remember, malaria can reactivate because a latent infection can be established by Plasmodium vivax and Plasmodium ovale in the liver. Those are the hypnozoite forms. You can actually cover those with primaquine. Remember, you want to be careful with primaquine in patients that have a G6PD deficiency. And then the high-yield HIV med side effects, the big ones I'm just going to mention here, if you have... if a patient is taking like didanosine or stavudine, you generally want to go ahead and think about a pancreatitis. If a patient is taking a protease inhibitor, don't forget your fat redistribution, like the fat lipodystrophy. If a patient is taking Bactrim, right, and they have like a hemolytic anemia, think about G6PD deficiency. If a patient is taking efavirenz, think about Vivadrenz. Remember, you don't want to give efavirenz to a pregnant female, right, because it's a teratogen. So just those high-yield things you want to keep in mind. For abacavir, right, for abacavir, you generally want to think about a HLA-B57 associated life-threatening hypersensitivity reaction. So you want to test for HLA-B57 before you place patients on abacavir. And then just one weird thing that just came to mind. Again, it's not in the slide set, but just sort of keep this in mind. If a patient with HIV has a bacillary angiomatosis, which is classically caused by Bartonella henselae, you generally want to go with a macrolide, right? So like azithromycin, clarithromycin, or erythromycin. Alternatively, you can actually use doxycycline, okay? But if a patient has like a life-threatening Bartonella infection, they're like circling the drain, they have like very abnormal vital signs, in general, you want to give them, again, you can give them doxycycline or a macrolide, but you also want to add on rifampin, okay? It's just one of those things that are low yield, but if they show up, it's one of those things that almost everyone will get wrong on a test. So just sort of keep that in mind. Now, next slide. So empiric management. So this is the last slide. So this is just a grab bag of like one-liners that you just basically need to know about, right? So post-antibiotic diarrhea, you're thinking about C. diff, right? Clostridium difficile. Remember, you prevent the spread of C. diff with hand washing. Now, C. diff, before, the first line medication was metronidazole. That is no longer the case as of a few weeks ago. Right now, the first line treatment for C. diff colitis is actually vancomycin. Vancomycin is the drug of choice for the management of C. diff. However, if the NBME does not update their exam, go with metronidazole, okay? But for people taking like internal medicine boards or anything of that sort, you probably want to go ahead and go with vancomycin. Vancomycin is now the drug of choice for the treatment of C. diff. Now, C. diff, I said, you can also treat it with metronidazole. Alternatively, you can treat it with a non-reabsorbable macrolide like fidaxomicin, okay? Now, bloody diarrhea plus liver abscess. Hopefully, that gets you thinking of Entamoeba histolytica. Remember, that's like the only high-yield protozoal cause of bloody diarrhea. You treat that with metronidazole. Remember, your get gap on the metro mnemonic for metronidazole, the G for Giardia, the E for Entamoeba, the T for Trichomonas, right? So Giardia, remember, it's the foul-smelling diarrhea after drinking from a stream. The Entamoeba is the bloody diarrhea plus liver abscess. The T is for Trichomonas, remember, the strawberry cervix. And then the GAP, the G is for Gardnerella vaginalis, right? So like fishy-smelling vaginal discharge with clue cells on imaging, I mean on microscopy. And then they tell you the pH is more than 4.5. The A is for anaerobes. Okay, remember, metronidazole covers anaerobes really well. That's why it's used for most GI antibiotic regimens. And then the P is for protozoans. And then watery diarrhea in an AIDS patient, hopefully that gets you thinking of Cryptosporidium parvum. Remember, it's acid fast, okay? And you treat that with nitazoxanide. Now, diarrhea in a post-transplant patient, hopefully this gets you thinking of CMV colitis. You cover CMV with ganciclovir, okay? So you gang up against CMV with ganciclovir. And then what causes, this is more a micro question, right? So what causes kidney infections in post-kidney transplant patients? Hopefully this gets you thinking of the BK virus, the BK polyoma virus, just sort of keep that weird association locked somewhere in your mind. Now, pneumonia in a HIV positive patient with interstitial infiltrates on X-ray. That's pretty classic for pneumocystis jervetzi, okay? And for that, you use trimethoprim sulfamethoxazole or IV pentamidine if TMPSMX is not an answer choice. And remember that if a patient has pneumocystis carinii pneumonia, right, and they have an AA gradient that is greater than 35, or they have a P little AO2 that's less than 70, so that just double 35, or they have an O2 SAD that's less than 92%, okay, you go ahead and add steroids to that treatment regimen. Very high yield to know those three things: AA gradient greater than 35, P little AO2 less than 70, or SAO2 less than 92%. In addition to Bactrim, you go ahead and add steroids. Now, influenza, right? So the hour cutoff is 48 hours, right? If it's more than 48 hours, you don't treat. You just recommend supportive care, whatever that means. But if it's less than 48 hours, you can give oseltamivir or zanamivir. Remember, those are your neuraminidase inhibitors. And those just decrease the duration of symptoms. Now, for mastitis, right, so this will be a postpartum lady with unilateral breast tenderness and fever. If you see that, think about mastitis. The bug you're trying to cover is Staph aureus. And classically on exams, the right answer is Nafcillin or Dicloxacillin. I will say that Dicloxacillin is probably the most common answer you'll see on exams. So you choose the anti-staphylococcal penicillins. And don't forget, don't get dinged by this on an exam. If they describe a postpartum lady with fever and bilateral breast tenderness, that is not mastitis. You really want to think more about a breast engorgement with that. Now, general HIV regimen, you generally want to use triple therapy, right? So highly active antiretroviral therapy or HART. And triple therapy classically on exams involves two NRTIs, okay, plus one other drug. The one other drug could be an integrase inhibitor or an NNRTI or a protease inhibitor, okay? So just keep that in mind. So classically on exams, it's usually like tenofovir, emtricitabine plus some other drug that belongs to those three classes I mentioned. You could also use like maraviroc, although that's like pretty bizarre, right? I've probably never seen that used like ever, like in the real world, like maraviroc or like what's the other one? Maraviroc, and there is one weird drug. Huh. Well, maybe it will come to my mind by the end. Okay. Now, foul-smelling diarrhea after drinking from a stream, that's Giardia, give metronidazole. conjunctival injection after returning from Hawaii. That is leptospirosis, okay? So that's caused by leptospirin tetragens. You cover that with doxycycline. And one thing I forgot to mention when I was talking about Rocky Mountain spotted fever, classically on exams, in addition to the rash on the palms and soles, they usually have thrombocytopenia on labs. So that's just one thing you want to keep in mind. If you see thrombocytopenia on labs in a patient, really begin to think about things like anaplasmosis or ehrlichiosis or Rocky Mountain spotted fever caused by Rickettsia rickettsii. And one thing again that just came to mind, if a patient has a Legionella, right, you give them a macrolide, right? So like azithromycin, clarithromycin, or erythromycin. Another thing that came to mind is what is this thing called? H. pylori, right? So for H. pylori, you want to choose triple therapy, right? So remember your cap mnemonic for that: clarithromycin, amoxicillin, plus a PPI. If that's not an answer choice on your exam, go with quadruple therapy. That's like MBTP, the M for metronidazole, the B for bismuth, the T for tetracycline, and then the P for PPI. And then back to this slide, the bug you classically want to cover in osteomyelitis is Staph aureus. So pick something that covers Staph, and I'll talk about that right now. So let's talk about the drugs that cover MRSA. It's a super high yield list you want to know for tests. MRSA is covered by vancomycin, okay? It's covered by daptomycin. It's covered by ceftaroline. That's a fifth generation cephalosporin. Bactrim, trimethoprim sulfamethoxazole, also covers MRSA. Clindamycin also covers MRSA. Remember, clindamycin is that drug that's classically associated with C. diff colitis. Linezolid, that's your 50S inhibitor that prevents initiation, also covers MRSA. Remember, it's a weak monoamine oxidase inhibitor, so it could trigger serotonin syndrome. And then for Pseudomonas, and actually one last thing for MRSA, you can also cover that with your streptogramins. Classically, that's a dalfopristin, quinupristin. Okay. Now for Pseudomonas, again, very high yield list to know. Pseudomonas is covered by ceftazidime. That's a third generation cephalosporin. It is covered by cefepime. That's a fourth generation cephalosporin. It is covered by your fluoroquinolones like ciprofloxacin. In fact, that's ciprofloxacin is just one of those things you never really think about for Pseudomonas, but it actually covers Pseudomonas pretty well. Your aminoglycosides also cover Pseudomonas, right? So remember, like cystic fibrosis patients, they classically get inhaled tobramycin. That helps them cover that chronic Pseudomonas infection. Remember, patients with CF, more than 20 years old, classically get pneumonia with Pseudomonas, versus patients with CF that are less than 20 years old that tend to get pneumonia with Staph aureus. And then other things that cover Pseudomonas, your carbapenems like imipenem, meropenem, erdapenem, doripenem, those all cover Pseudomonas. And then your, there's one more thing, Aztreonam. Aztreonam also covers Pseudomonas, and also vitamin Z, Zosyn, right? Everyone gets this in the hospital. Piperacillin and Tazobactam also cover Pseudomonas. Very high yield to know this list, okay? Very high yield to know that. Now, pertussis, right? So if they describe a person that has like a chronic cough, or a cough that is so bad that they have a subconjunctival hemorrhage with the cough, or they have like vomiting, like an episode of vomiting after the cough, think about Bordetella pertussis. It's something you'll get if you vaccinate your children. And again, as a public service announcement, vaccines do not cause autism. Okay, back to this. So pertussis, you cover that with erythromycin or any other macrolide, okay? And you also prophylax close contacts with a macrolide, again, also like erythromycin. Remember, erythromycin can also be used to treat gastroparesis because it's a motiline receptor agonist. Now, close contact meningitis prophylaxis, you can choose one of three drugs. You can choose rifampin, that's actually preferred. Alternatively, you can choose ciprofloxacin, or you can choose ceftriaxone. Okay, so if a patient has Neisseria meningitidis and they have close contacts, you want to prophylax those people so they don't get meningitis as well with either rifampin, that's preferred, or ciprofloxacin or ceftriaxone. And then for otitis media, right, you generally want to treat with amoxicillin plus clavulanic acid on exams, or you can treat with just amoxicillin, or you can also trade with cefuroxime. That's just one of those weird things that occasionally shows up on tests. And then if it's otitis externa, hopefully you're thinking about Pseudomonas, you generally want to use like a fluoroquinolone drop, okay? Generally I'll say a fluoroquinolone eardrop is probably the correct answer on tests. And then for a patient that has conjunctivitis and they wear a contact lens, or they have a corneal ulcer and they wear a contact lens, you also want to cover Pseudomonas, okay? You want to give a drug that covers Pseudomonas in some way, shape, or form. And then the last thing that came to mind, if a patient has measles, there's generally nothing you can do, okay? But you could try supplementing vitamin A for those people. Let's see. So this is kind of me freestyling at this point. I'm just trying to think of any high yield thing I didn't put in this slide set that may show up on a test. Let's see. Just give me a second. Let me do some thinking. Let's see. Well, nothing is really coming to mind. Croup, I guess, caused by the parainfluenza virus. That could be treated with like a racemic epinephrine. Let's see, what else? If a patient has... let's see. Yeah, nothing else is really coming to mind. But just hopefully you find this podcast to be pretty helpful. I know I was kind of all over the place with this, but I was somewhat organized, but I was also all over the place because as I was going through this, more and more thoughts were coming to my head. So keep this in mind. This is a podcast you probably want to listen to like more than one, so like make good notes the first time and go over it over and over again. It's just one of these things where if you're taking a step one or a step two or a step three, you probably get like 20 questions correct just from listening to this podcast. So I hope you find this helpful. Have a wonderful rest of your day and God bless. I'll see you in the next podcast. Thank you.